Hi, welcome back to the Chasing Tone podcast. I'm Travis.
I'm Max.
I'm Brian.
And we're joined today with very special guest, one of my favorite people in the industry, Philippe Herndon from the Caroline Guitar Company. Thanks for being with us, man.
I'm Philippe.
Yes, you are Philippe. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, let's do it again. I'm Travis.
I'm Max.
I'm Brian.
I'm Philippe.
Yes, sir.
Yes, you are.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. Are you wearing green?
No. It's pretty loathsome here in Colombia. The St. Patty's Festival is like, it ruins our city for like a weekend, and so I'm still not wearing green out of a protest against it. Yeah, it's basically like, it's like the worst collection of drunk white people.
So it's Indianapolis.
You say it sounds like.
No, it's so funny. My. Yeah, and I have a toddler son, and I don't know if you know this, but I have another kid that's going to be here April 29th, which is awesome.
Yeah, I heard. Congrats.
Oh, thanks, man. But so anyway, there's a big parade downtown Indy today, and my wife and one of her friends who has an infant, they're like, we should go. I'm like, yeah, that's probably not the best idea, but you definitely should go because an infant, a toddler, a pregnant woman, and another lady are going to go hang out for the St. Patty's Parade downtown Indy.
sounds like a plan.
Yeah, I was like, you're going to dodge drunk people at noon? Do they turn the canal green?
Oh, God.
Yeah, we have a canal that goes through Indianapolis, and they turn it green, which is pretty cool.
Do they really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
So if you pee into it,
it'll turn yellow, blue and green make yellow.
depending how hydrated you are.
Yeah, exactly. But no, so one thing I love about you, man, is you're like, I don't want to talk about my company. I talk about that all day, every day. But we got to talk about it just a little bit.
Oh, no. Okay.
Okay. Right. And here's how I'll segue. One of my favorite stories that you told me is the moment you realized you had your Eureka moment of how to do the, excuse my ignorance, but on the kilobyte, I just call the crazy switch. I don't know what you call it, but the
Havoc.
Yeah, the Havoc. That's right. I'm so sorry. But yeah, it takes it into the oscillation automatically, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now, where were you when you had your Eureka moment of how to make that happen?
Oh, I was in the shower. It was really, I think Brian has had these moments too. And we've chatted about it. And I was, we're like, you're grinding on something for so long. And mm-hmm. I think this is part of the creative process that I really value is like, I was just stuck for so long on that pedal and nothing was going the way I wanted. Or I had something that I would like, okay, I could put this out, but I'm not really like that crazy about it.
Right.
And I'd been working off that data sheet for so long. And then, I've been trying to build like the frame around it as well, you know, where and what I mean by the frame is like when you think about the stuff like the input buffering, the output buffering, your summing amp, the drive preamp, all that stuff around the 2399 delay chip part. And all of a sudden I was like in the shower and I think I hadn't thought about the delay for a couple of days or I'd even thought to myself, well, I'll just give up. You know, right. It's almost like, you've been exercising and you've been like trying to do something so hard and you can't. And then all of a sudden you relax
and it is.
Or maybe you take a week off and then all of a sudden it's like things come together. I remember showering and it totally occurred to me two things. One was how we could get the thing to oscillate in that cool kind of way.
Yeah.
But also one of the challenges of getting it to oscillate in that cool kind of way without the click of the noise of the momentary switch hitting, because when you have that click, it puts out a little bit of a pulse. And the second thing was how to get the frame a certain way where we could have the drive just on the repeats, but not on your initial clean signal.
Right.
And this is really like basic stuff. You know, I mean, when I talk about this stuff to like real, you know, engineers, they're like, oh, yeah, that's pretty obvious. But I hadn't seen people really do it before in our industry. And I think it was, you know, I'm kind of glad that I spent months grinding at it and thinking about this circuit so much. And then all of a sudden, I was showering and shampooing, and it, like, hit me. I'm like, oh, my goodness, I figured it out. And I'm like, I think I had, like, the fastest shower ever. It was like, out, you know. And I'm like, just getting dressed. I'm like, whatever clothes are here, I'll wear yesterday's. I don't give a you know. And, I'm like, out the door in a hurry. I'm like, bye, you know, no, I don't need breakfast. And I got here to the workspace. It takes me about 12 minutes to get the workspace. Okay. And I was pretty much done with that, those two parts of it within like 20 minutes.
Nice.
You know, it's all of a sudden you're like, breadboard, here, boom, boom, boom. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, that didn't work. This, that worked. This. And it was done. You know, it was like, oh my goodness. You know, just sort of months of grinding at it. And I think that's the cool thing. You and I were talking about this with regard sometimes to stuff like, you know, mm-hmm. you guys have had so many issues with like
lawsuits.
Different people like cloning. And, yeah.
That's terrible. It's funny because it's true. That's a Maxism. Yeah. That's a Maxism. But
like with the cloning and stuff like that, it's like they can take, if they go in and steal the circuit, they can steal the circuit, but they can't. I know where I figured out how to do that. You know, they can't take that moment.
Right.
Away.
You're exactly right. You know, they can just kind of repeat the product. They can't repeat the process.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And kind of to backtrack a little bit, Philippe, one of the cool things I thought that you mentioned, you're talking about, well, to an engineer, this would be obvious, but to, you know, to a guitar player, it was something really cool. And I think that's what separates a lot of companies like yours and a lot of the non-huge faceless companies that I'm not going to name, but mm-hmm. it's the fact that we're guitar players.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're doing electronics from a guitar mm-hmm. player's perspective, not mm-hmm. from an engineer's perspective.
Right. So, you don't look,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Philippe mentioned a data sheet, but that's not what he uses to make pedals. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right. He uses his ears. Heart and his soul. Yeah. And I mean, everything, you know, the guitar player's personality. First,
right.
You know,
right.
Well, the data sheet helps. I ain't gonna lie.
Well, right.
I mean, it's like I was asked like I have this hilarious like textbook of like op amp app notes.
So it's like an
from
op
like
amp.
The early '80s, like the Force MIMS thing. I think that's his name, Force MIMS the Third. It's like projects with op amps.
Isn't that the dude from Gilligan's Island? Oh, that's Thurston. That's Thurston Howell the Third.
Thurston Howell the Third. Yes,
same guy. Same guy.
Oh, before I made my money in the pedal business, you know, my fortune.
See, Max Gilligan's Island was this show like back in like the '70s.
It was even black and white, I think, for part of it.
Oh, MIMS.
No, the world was in black and white in the '70s. The whole thing turned color around like 1978.
Exactly.
What was Laserdisc like?
We were in black and white. Like, Ryan and I were in black and white as children. And then all of a sudden, ta-da! You know.
See, in the '70s, my hair would have been cool. Not now, though.
Yeah.
Not now. But I'm still fighting it.
Give yourself credit. That's an impressive mane you have there.
Well, thank you, sir. Well, thank you. Yeah. I got my mullet portion cut off the other day, so it's.
You could be on Broadway as the Lion King and not even
costume. That's awesome. That's a dude. There used to be this guy from Texas. Remember the guy that used to come to the open mic night and play, and he looked like a cowardly lion.
Yeah,
that was awesome. Sorry, that's an inside joke between me and Max, and let's just stop it there because it's not funny to anyone else. Because I don't remember the guy's name, and I can't post a picture.
So we'll just take.
There's always like three or four characters at the open mic and karaoke night who are like, yeah. You know, they're going to be there. So it's going to be like the skinny, the really skinny dude with the t-shirt that's too large who sings Jeremy by Pearl Jam.
In Vincent's, Indiana, there was this guy. I've never seen somebody take karaoke so seriously. He actually called himself KK, Karaoke King.
Oh, no.
And this guy, it was so much fun to watch because he would get completely hammered, you know, and it would always go on dollar beer night. So he'd go on dollar beer night, and then he'd get completely hammered. And his big number, he had a couple warm-up numbers, but his closer was Copacabana. Yes, and that was when his shirt came off and he started dancing on tables.
Of course. Yes. I mean, why not?
But we should find the karaoke king. I bet he's still in Vincennes doing karaoke every Thursday.
We should do a podcast during that night.
I would tuck a buck just to do it.
You tuck a buck? Yeah. Wrong venue, Max. Wrong venue.
Welcome to the stage, karaoke king.
But no, back to the kilobyte, man. It's a very inspiring pedal. It's not awesome. It's not just a delay. You know, and don't get me wrong, delays are cool. They do their thing, but it's kind of like your prototype that you have, which we still don't know what to call it, but
which one?
The Skyline?
Oh yeah,
the wheelhouse, the sky house, the wheel line.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. But anyway, they both have a thing about them, you know, to where they deliver inspiring tones. They actually make you play different, and that's something that, you know, man. Because I mean, like, like you guys were joking, they're all tube screamers, you know. But it's like
they all are.
And this phaser is a tube screamer, but and that's the thing. That's what we all look for. I mean, we all look for that tone in our head. But it's nice to be derailed every now and again by something that just makes you play completely different.
I think that's an area like electroharmonics. I think that's a place that them, Pictronics, Earthquake, they kind of kill it in those areas.
Yeah.
You know?
They're amazing at it.
Because it's not like, so, I mean, I've talked about this before. You can't say, all right, which is just like your basic chorus, you know, right? Like Earthquaker. It's just, that's not their gig.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm sure you probably get people asking you, Philippe, you know, I just want like a slap back. And you're like, well, it'll do it, but you're missing the point of the whole delay. You know what I mean?
I had a guy at the Nashville Amp Show ask me, came in, and it was like, he's just like, I just want a slap back. And I was like, oh boy, you know, this isn't going to end well. And
hit him in the face.
I dial up a slap back. It was the funniest moment. I dial up a slap back, I think is pretty good. And he looks at me and he plays through a little bit. And he's an awesome, like, old dude. I mean, you know the guy. He's wearing, like, a hat and, like, he's got the walrus mustache. He's,
like the guy that says diabetes.
Diabetes. Yeah. Yeah. He's Wilford Brimley.
Yeah. Wilford Brimley.
he plays these cool slapback things for maybe, like, 15 seconds. And he looks at our pedal, points at all those, like, diagrams on it. He's like, there's no way in hell I'm buying this thing.
Thank you. It's like thank you for forming your opinion.
Thank you for your time. Welcome to have fun at the Nashville Amp Show. You know, I mean that's you know it was just so it just so captures. But I agree with what you're saying about electroharmonics and Earthquaker. I'm really jealous of where Jamie has gotten to as a designer. He's kind of reached that point of like, you know, like old people back out of their driveway and they don't even look anymore. You know, they're just like, I'm backing out. Boom. You know,
my wife's not even old and she does that. Yeah. You go ahead. And then I'm going to tell the story about how my wife tried to throw her car away, but go ahead.
Oh yeah. Well, like Jamie, I asked him about like the rainbow machine. And I was like, and he goes, yeah, I was just going to do it. That's what I'm going to do. I was like, what an amazing point to get to where you're just like, you know, like some people, like people ask it, like I've messed around with like a rainbow machine. And it's like, people go like, you know, what's the use for this? And it's like, what's whatever, the use for this? Jamie would be like, you figure it out.
But for those of people, you know, that are listening that don't know Jamie, how cool was it? This is the kind of person he is. How cool was it to basically invite everybody in the pedal industry to a bowling alley and like,
yep,
in L.A.? And I think it wasn't like the nicest part of LA, if I remember, but it was awesome because it was just like, let's go to this random bowling alley in the middle of LA and then, you know, drink some bowlings on me. Yeah. That was awesome.
Man, yeah. I call it the pedal prom.
Yeah. It was the pedal prom. Sans chicks.
Yeah. Well, Amanda was there. And I brought a friend.
There you go.
Who talked about how she got hit on almost as much as the rest of NAMM. I mean, oh my God, my headphones fell off.
I got to throw somebody under the bus here because I called him out on it at the pedal prom. But so you remember the drink tickets, right? So everybody got X amount of drink tickets, right?
The longest line ever.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. And the best service ever, of course. service with a frown and a screw you, you know?
Yeah.
But but anyway, Josh Scott from JHS. I saw him getting tickets offered, and he was just being nice. He was handing out the tickets, and he was giving out the allotted amount, but he just so happened to be, you know, tearing them off of this huge roll of tickets. So I called him out in front of everybody. I was like, look at Josh. He stole all the tickets. He's so Max, I think Max swiped a few extra tickets.
I was like, oh, he's like, you need tickets? I'm like, yeah, yes, I do. And Jamie had already given me some.
Tickets.
I just got double tickets.
I
got double drunk as a result.
You get double drunk. I was completely sober that night.
You were not.
You get drunk and then you sober up in the long line.
Yeah.
That's basically it.
That's why I was drinking double drinks.
But did you have the pleasure of hearing the guy sing karaoke in the bar where we got our drinks, and every song was a female song? Like, yeah. One of them is "It's Raining Men."
He was getting into it, though.
He was into it, man. He was great. And then I forget the another one, but they were all like very, very, like one was a Blondie tune. I mean, and he was terrible, but he was getting into it. So that, the pedal prom, we need to do that like once a month.
It's awesome.
I love it. I always wondered who would try to be the, you know, I'm not going to name any names, but I think a couple people were trying to be this. Or who's going to try to be the Jonathan Bender of the pedal prom? You know, like show up like, I'm a bad boy. You know, I'm the bad boy of the pedal business. You know?
I think that was me.
I'm the bad boy of a business that pays less than a receptionist at a drum company. You
know? I just remember somebody stole my damn shoe. Somebody stole one of my damn shoes. That's all I remember.
For bowling. You had to trade one of your shoes for your bowling shoes.
Is that what it was? I remember, yeah. I went to go get bowling shoes, and then the next thing I know, I'm wearing bowling shoes, and I only have one shoe.
They stole my shoe, Max.
Yeah, I kept saying it. I was like, we need to... They stole my shoe, and I think there was some expletives thrown in there.
See, I was a drunk kid at prom. I was like, man, that kid's loaded. I was like, that's me.
But yeah, the pedal prom, that was the best thing about NAMM for me, really.
That was fun.
Yeah. Oh, fun. It's what I look forward to, you know. That's what I, you know, that's I mean, the rest of, you know, the rest of NAMM I can kind of take or leave, you know. I mean, you guys are great getting to meet getting to see friends of ours and stuff, but like there has to be a rule against like the kind of NAMM shredding that man just like after, like it reminds me of the scene in a movie Ghost World where Steve Buscemi goes to see like this authentic blues musician, but he's forced to open for a band called Blues Hammer.
Yes, I totally remember that. I didn't. And then, I thought I was the only person like that's ever seen that
playing,
movie.
Like ragtime, like acoustic guitar, yes. Like an old man, like, and he's like, "Wow, you know." And then like this girl's like, "You're gonna love Blues Hammer. They're authentic."
And then
blues.
He goes off. He's like, "Blues Hammer." I forgot all about
and Blues that. Hammer starts playing, and they sound like Huey Lewis in the News with like shred guitar over the top of it. I've been plowing and picking cotton all day, you know. So, and I've warned people who like, hey, are you guys going to go to NAMM in the summer? I really want to go and maybe help you work your booth. And I'm like, just sending them clips to Blues Hammer. And like, be ready for 96 hours.
Oh yeah.
This.
Although two things I want to give a shout out to. There's a company there called Dubs, D-U-B-S, and they make acoustic filters, you know, earplugs, if you will. But they're great. They, you know, they do the thing where they just minimize volume or whatever. But and they're comfortable enough to wear for 96 hours because I did. I wore them. But no, so thanks for that. But I will say one thing, no offense to Brian here, but Philippe, I think you did NAMM right this year. I think you went about it the right way.
Like two meetings, and then like I ran home.
Well, no, and not exhibiting.
Yeah.
You know, just going there, making your connections. I mean, unfortunately, the exhibiting, that's how you get to know the people and things like that. And that's the public eye. But it's like you said, it's getting so... The thing I noticed about NAMM this year were the tire kickers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Philippe, I want to see what you thought about this, but I did an interview the other day and I was talking about NAMM, and it feels like the world has changed so drastically over the past 15 years that NAMM's not really necessary anymore. You know, I mean, originally it was designed to bring people who build things with people who sell things, you know?
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And now it's like, marketplace. If you need a retailer in Idaho, then you just Google for one. And then, yeah. You know what I mean? And then email them or call them or whatever.
Well, that, and there's things like, well, what we're doing exactly right now. People don't have to leave the comfort of their office or their car or however they listen or watch these podcasts to get to know us a little bit.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, for those of you who aren't familiar with Philippe, he's not putting on a show. He's this funny all the time. You know, this is Philippe, you know, and that's like...
Looks aren't everything.
But, you know, the thing is like, it used to be the only way we could meet you is to go to one of these AMP shows or NAMMs or whatever. And I still think that's important. You still have to be there. Mm-hmm. And Philippe, you were there, you know, but I think a lot of it is like Brian's saying, man, it's not the same anymore. Mm-mm. You know, and I won't even go back 15 years. I'll go back. Well, when did I meet you for the first time? 7 years ago, 8 years ago?
Something like that, yeah.
That NAMM in Nashville, which, and I'm going to be one of the old timers that say, oh, it used to be so much bigger. But it really did.
Yeah.
But, you
because
know.
Because at that point, like the Gibsons and the PVs and, you know, the bigger companies were actually exhibiting there.
Yeah, they're huge. You
know? Now Nashville is just a lot of the smaller companies.
Yeah.
So.
We really struggle with it because, like, My retail sales guy is like, you need to start doing NAMM again. You know, he's like, we need a booth, we need the show, we need this kind of thing. And I can see that point. For me in Anaheim, it's tough because I have family who live in Fountain Valley, which is 12 minutes away. So, yeah, I want to spend some time with my folks, you know, and I, you know, it's just important for me to be able to do that. But the other thing I was thinking about with this as well is I'm kind of curious, like, in the end, when you pile up all the money, I remember Brian told me how much you guys have spent on freight. And I couldn't help, you know, just freight. And it's and you guys are, you're not Spartan, but, you know, it's like, there's a few amps, there's a few pedal boards, there's display stuff, and I'm like, good, you know, good Lord, like, I mean, you guys could do a tour. I was thinking about this for companies like our size, like, you could tour like your 10 biggest retailers and meet them in their on their stomping ground.
Right.
Train their sales staff and build displays and, like, I mean, for less money than you spent on freight.
Yeah, there's different ways to appropriate your funds.
It's exactly right, man. You know, I mean, it pisses me off because it's like, if you were to you know, purchase freight as a person, they'd be like, it's, you know, a couple $100. But you're like, oh, we're a company. Oh, well,
it's then
$1,000. It's $10,000 for freight for you now since you're commercial. And it's the same. It's just, it's ridiculous. Like, internet
that's
is like
$400. And how much is it just to have somebody plug in your television? True story.
You're paying union rates for a guy to plug in something to an outlet because,
because
you aren't
certified
to plug in a light.
Yeah.
Like, I can figure it out. It's got two plugs. I see two there. It's, you know.
Next time, at least now you know you don't have to hire a pallet wrapper because that's my jam.
That's true.
You need to come up with it. It's really, it's a classic inelastic purchase where you have no negotiating leverage whatsoever. Like, you have no ability to bargain, no ability to do these things. I was laughing, like, we were debating exhibiting this year, and our strategy was to mail all our stuff via freight to my parents' garage and just and then build our booth in my parents' garage and then rent a truck or something and then just, like, see if we can sneak it in somehow.
Right.
You know, like I'm sitting there like, this is turning into like Ocean's 11, you know, like maneuver around, you know, the NAMM fees and stuff like that. And it's just, it's a real challenge. But
damn that, Andy Garcia.
You know, it's an interesting game because on the flip side of it, though, like when I see your booth, when I see JHS's, when I see Earthquakers, when I see you know, some different stuff, I'm like, damn it, I wish I had a booth. Yeah. You know, because the flip side of it is you're at NAMM and you're asked a million times why you don't have a booth.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, like, okay, comparing last year, what we did, we had a big booth, right? Big elaborate booth. This year, I'm like, you know what? NAMM is pointless. So I'm just going to get a little bitty tiny booth. I just want to talk to people. That's all I want to do.
Right, yeah.
And Jamie, of course, he got a huge booth.
Right,
yeah.
And I haven't talked to him since then at depth to really find out whether, you know, he wants to do it again. But for me, man, I'm not going to do a big booth anymore. It's just, I just want to shake hands with people and talk to people and see what they're thinking and see what they're liking and, you know, just hang out with people. And I don't want to spend $60,000 to do that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, a friend of mine runs Electro Harmonix's booth, or not Electro Harmonix, Electro Voices booth. EV.
Okay, yeah.
You know, mic, speakers, stuff like that. And they spend close to at least $500,000.
Oh, yeah.
My God.
Crazy, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
We need to get into Pro Audio.
Well, I mean, there's people.
No. We need to get into audiophile stuff.
Yeah.
Like the dude you pay $20,000 for a turntable that.
Man, let's get Richard Goodsell. He knows all about that stuff.
Oh my God.
We're starting a new company right now.
Yeah. This is what it's like to see a baby get made, people. An intellectual baby, perverts.
Hashtag awkward.
That makes Max what? Kind of a third party?
A voyeur.
The camera guy.
He's a voyeur.
The camera guy.
The camera guy.
Nice knowing you, Max.
Don't mind me. Just pretend like I'm not here.
We need to change subjects.
It's funny when you think about it because, like, Brian, guys, if you and I designed something, we're like, let's build a little like preamp, like about a 500 series size module, and what it will do is it'll kind of warm up digital sound, so you could take something like your computer or your iPod or something like that, and it runs into this thing, or your MP3 player, so that it warms it up and EQs it and maybe excites it and tries to smooth off some of that high end stuff, and then it can go two RCA outs line level to your receiver, so that way you could call it like the revinylizer or something.
Yeah, there you
like
go.
That.
Right. Yep.
Right. So it's like if you and I designed something like this, right, and we put it in a box and we figured it out, we'd probably like, you know, it's made in America, it has this many ICs and this much stuff and this much transistor and EQ, blah, 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 blah. And we'd probably be like, maybe $200. You know, like that seems reasonable for us. You know, this is what the value of it is, and it has a nice, you know, we put a nice glowing display or something like that, so it impresses people. Right. It's like if we did this in the pro audio realm, or not the pro audio, the home audio,
the
audio
hi-fi, yeah.
realm, I think we could charge $10,000 for this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dude, I know a guy he's an amp tech, but he's really, really into vinyl. That's his jam, right? So he's been making these, the arms for record players, you know what I mean? And they're made out of, I think it's just like balsa, but I guess different woods transfer different sounds and all this just from the arm. And he's been basically taking, and he'll tell me, he's like, no, don't get me wrong. I'm not getting paid for the part. I'm getting paid for the experience and the knowledge. I'm like, I get that.
I love it.
I'm like,
I love it.
You're still buying a dowel that's 50 cents. And you're selling them for $100. I was like, and how long have you been at this? He's like, dude, I've been working at it easily for 3 or 4 months. I'm like, I think you're doing all right, buddy. But you're right, man. The what people will pay for hi-fi, and it always comes back to, you know, people hear with their eyes. And that's the best thing about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. You put a little Corinthian leather on that arm. Oh, man.
That ruined the tone, bro.
A little gunstock oil for that dowel.
There you go.
A little gunstock oil and a little Corinthian leather, man. I mean, you just make a killing in that, you know? It's like when people get mad at how much we charge. Like, generally, like, you guys and us, we charge around $200 for pedals most of the time. Like, that's the street price. When people get mad at me about how much we charge for pedals, I'm just like, I'm sorry. I lived in like the 8th arrondissement of Paris, which had, like, you'd see like 50,000 euro dog collars.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's like diamond encrusted leather, handcrafted, tooled dog collars. They had like dog food bowls of pure sterling silver and gold and diamonds for 10,000 euro. Yeah. Just crazy stuff. And I'm like, you're really going to get mad. Are we really going to do this, Snehir?
Yeah.
Like, are we really going to do this?
Are we really
going
to go round and round for $200 here?
Yeah. It's like, you know, and it's funny because it'll often come from guys who have no problem paying $4,000 for an acoustic.
Right.
You know, they'll be like, they're like, oh, yeah, you know, $4,000 for acoustic. Yeah. And then I'm like, yeah, I'm making these pedals. They're like, oh, these are awesome. How much are you charging? $50-$60? I'm like,
no.
Yeah, no. It's not carolineguitar.org.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm stealing that.
Yeah,
you.
That is great. That is so you funny. Know,
so.
That's going to be the name of this episode, carolineguitar.org. Oh, that's so awesome, man.
Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah, man, you're completely right. And that's the thing, too. And Brian always tries to educate people on this. And it's, I mean, the brass tacks is, they're made in America.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and it's expensive, too.
By someone who gives a shit.
Exactly.
Right. But,
yeah.
Like, but not a political prisoner, you know, who made the mistake of writing Tiananmen Square into Google one day.
Exactly.
Like, he's actually... like by people who care, you
exactly
know?
Yeah, and for the most part, I mean, well, everybody that works, you know, in under the Wampler Pedals umbrella for the most part is a guitar player or mm-hmm. or you know is married to a guitar player.
Yeah,
you know, and that's, for instance, and the cool thing about that is if Brian, well, when Brian has prototypes, he has different people within his immediate company and he can just say, hey, try this out. He doesn't have to source out players to where, like, you know, we've talked about before how some of these other Chinese brands make their pedals.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean...
well, there's also knowledge and process. I mean,
well, of course.
How many times have I seen people, like, go, like, hey, I managed to find the schematic for Wampler's Wubbazoo, but I made it, and it doesn't sound as good. It's like, you know, it's like, I've seen Brian have to answer that question, like, well, yeah, we have to sort JFETs. You
right.
know, we have to match these things. You know, there's like voicing that matters. I mean, component choice matters, layout matters. You know, you know, all of this stuff that like is care and craft into what you do.
Right.
That
right.
makes a difference.
And
you
they're,
know,
and they're like, but you don't understand. I built it on perf board, and I've got all this wiring inside, and it oscillates on this high gain distortion.
Well, and,
and you're like, yeah.
And I think a lot of it is people...
hey, wait a second. I also built it in a Home Depot utility box, you know, like a junction box that I drilled out, you know. And
perfect. You know, I think a lot of that comes from the off-on mindset. And what I mean by that is when you look at a schematic for things that aren't audio related, for the most part, they either turn on or off. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So if you follow the schematic and it turns on, boom, it works. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. But when you get into anything, especially like guitar pedals, like the one thing that blew my mind, and you mentioned it, that makes such a huge difference is layout. You know, and mm-hmm. there's companies that sell kits and the schematic's right, but it just doesn't sound right. But, you know, and that's the thing that cracks me up with the audio guys is they'll wired up due to or based off the schematic, they'll turn it on. And their on isn't as good as our on.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get mad, so it's broken, or it's not a good schematic, or the original pedal sucks because your clone doesn't sound right.
Right.
You mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
That's frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, especially when they're all tube
layout,
screamers.
Oh, go on, Brian. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, especially when they're all tube screamers anyways.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I was interested, Brian's take. I mean, this will be a discussion for another time or sidebar, but I was curious, like, people have talked about 808s versus, like, you know, the newer clones and things. And I sometimes wonder when Travis mentions layout, you know, the original 808 was on a single side board with, like, stand-up resistors. It had, like, a ground edge.
Yeah.
You know, yes, it wasn't ground planed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm convinced, like, that has some difference to it with, like, an old 808 versus, like, all the clones.
You would
like,
yeah. have to.
It's a huge difference.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, I know whenever we were doing the Clarksdale, there were parts that it's not necessarily, how do I put this, values were altered in order to make it sound like an old 808. You know what I mean?
Right.
It wasn't just following a schematic and be like, all right, here we go.
Well, I mean, even
like down to the op amp, it's not a 4558 because it didn't.
It didn't sound right.
Didn't sound like it.
Because I mean, yeah. I don't know if I'm giving away too much here, and if I am, we'll edit it out. But I remember,
and if I am, then we'll just, you know,
yeah, and then we'll have to kill Philippe. But but I remember we went through 10 different op amps easily. Like we were sitting on the floor of near barn, and we had like a little dinner table chair, and we had 10 op amps lined up, and they were socketed, so we just kept trying them and trying them and trying them until finally we both agreed that's the one.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, we could go on and on forever about that.
But that's part of, like, how you're cooking for these things.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, oh, you know, it's like, we don't have this particular type of ingredient, so it's like, well, let's compensate in these other ways. It's part of the chemistry of this, you know?
Exactly.
Or this ingredient has changed, or this element has changed, and it's like, you find a way to do this. I mean, that's the grind. I mean, that's what people, people are paying. I try to explain this to people with like, with stuff. It's like a lot of this is what you're paying for is the grind and what we put into this. And like, I could sit there and tell you with like our Wave Cannon too, like how many hours I sat there with like that tone control, you know, it's like some guy just jumps online and grabs a tone control and thinks like, oh, this should work. I'm like,
probably not.
Not quite, you know?
So, but yeah, I'll tell you what, Philippe, we kind of need to wrap it up a little bit, but
it's been a blast, guys.
I want to get you on again. I really do, man, because this is great, and I feel like there's just more that needs to be tapped here.
Yeah, it's like we're just now getting into it.
So maybe this is just part one, but everybody check out, you know, Philippe's company, CarolineGuitar.com, correct?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
But buy Brian's stuff first because he's paying for this. Like, if you find something that you of ours that Brian doesn't already make, then do that.
why not both?
But yeah, exactly.
You can stack pedals, right?
Yeah, you can stack them. Like I have them. Here you go. Hold on. Here's a stack. Here's a prototype, and you know.
There's a stack. Yeah. Awesome, man. So check out Caroline Guitar Company. They got some great stuff going on. They're on social media outlets as well. Also check out Chasing Tones social media outlets. Chasing Tone Podcast on Facebook and Chasing Tone Podcast on Instagram.
And if you have any questions, make sure you email us. We always use more questions.
Yeah, podcast at wampapedals.com or drop them in the YouTube comments. Philippe, thank you so much for doing this, man.
Real blast, Travis, Max, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
All right, for Max and Brian, I'm Travis. Thank you guys so much.